Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is the A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that we see underneath.
Yes, that's right. And this is episode number 27.
Oh, yeah.
Our second one of the year. And we're going to talk about a movie called Lars and the Real Girl, which stars Ryan Gosling, right?
Yeah.
He's the main character. But boy, what a cast. This is a very well-cast movie, and they were all excellent, in my opinion.
Yeah, and a lot of people who you don't see as in movies a lot, like Emily Mortimer. I guess you see her in movies, but I met her in 30 Rock.
Oh, okay.
Patricia Clarkson. And
yeah, I think I've seen 30 Rock once or twice.
Oh, okay.
So well,
stick with the early seasons is my advice.
All right. And she played Emily Mortimer is Karen, so she's Gus's wife. Yeah, she's great. She was neat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. So this is my choice because I was thinking of a Valentine's movie, which may strike people as kind of funny because the basic story of the movie is that a very lonely and dysfunctional man, the only way he can find to get a girlfriend is to buy a life-size sex doll. And instead of using her for the purpose for which the company advertised her on the internet, he introduces her to everyone as his girlfriend who he met over the internet. And he lives in a very small town. And the story is essentially about Lars and the way he and Bianca, who is the doll's name, interact, and the way that the town reacts to the relationship. And then there's the real girl who's interested in Lars, and you could see would be pretty good for her, but he doesn't notice her. He's too shy.
Yeah.
And despite the way it sounds, it's not dirty. It's not, they don't go for the cheap joke. Or if they do go for a cheap joke, it's kind of laughed off as something anybody would make. And it's actually, I thought, a very sweet and loving movie that looks at the people we love falling in love and being willing to take chances.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah. Well, first of all, from your description, you know, I would never have picked up this movie, you know, just because, and it's kind of indicative of how the movie is. It's like this movie with that description could be a certain kind of movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not at all.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it's PG-13, for those that are wondering. And, the movie for me, it was an uncomfortable for me to watch because of, I mean, the best way for me to describe it is I kept feeling that it was going to go someplace that I didn't want it to go the entire movie. And it didn't. It didn't do that, which is a good thing, you know. So
right.
I think that my discomfort in watching it was a success for the movie. And I think it was probably one of the points of it was, you know, social conditioning and what's normal and, helping people and what's wrong with this, you know, is, you know, how do we help people? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, helping people even when you're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to say more than that until we get into spoilers, but that's kind of how I felt about the movie. I didn't hate the movie. I didn't love the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad to have watched it. I can tell you that. And I think that it was, you know, when you use the word sweet, I can say that I agree with that. But it's like, you know, all of the people in this town were really good people.
Yeah.
You know, and there wasn't a bad egg in there.
Maybe one person who's trying to be mean about it, and he is shut down by, surprisingly, by Lars's cubicle mate, who's a pretty cynical, gross person, actually, although that never comes out really. Mm-hmm. But he's the one where when Lars goes to work, he goes, Lars, look at this. And he's like, oh, could you wait to start with the porn? Do you have to start with it first thing in the morning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's the one who shows Lars the real doll website, which is where you buy the sex dolls. And but he shuts the guy down.
Right, right.
Because everybody's pretty protective of Lars. I think that's really pretty much all you could say. Despite the way it sounds, it is a sweet movie. And I remember I told Rose that we had watched it. She goes, oh, for the podcast, you're going to talk about it. And her face really just softened up. And she goes, oh, that's such a sweet story. And it's funny because watching it, knowing that you were watching it, I looked at it fresh because this was my third time to see it.
Oh,
our family loves this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband never even felt uncomfortable watching it, although you, at first you're watching going, ah, the shock, which mm-hmm. is the point. But she was like, it's such a sweet love story. And the thing is if you look at the overall, the story of Lars and the real girl, which is what it's called,
mm-hmm.
that's a sweet story.
It sure is. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess that's all there is to say other than to encourage you to watch it because mm-hmm. It's not gross. It's not what you think it would
all.
Be.
Not at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would recommend it. Go ahead and watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go to spoilers.
Sure enough.
Okay.
Sure enough.
So.
All right. So here we are.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. I think one of the things that tells you it's going to be a sweet story
mm-hmm.
is that when this big box shows up 6 weeks later,
mm-hmm.
You realize, at least we realized for the first time watching, my husband said, oh, he hears about, you know, the sex doll. He doesn't mm-hmm. even look at the screen. But then they show him going to church, and he's very religious.
Mm-hmm.
And the pastor's talking about the reason we're here is love. Love is the point of everything. And that's when he, 6 weeks later, gets the doll. And they show him, just like you would do before meeting somebody you're nervous about meeting, he's changing his clothes, he's practicing what to say in the mirror before he even opens the box.
Right.
He's combing yeah. his hair, he's, you know, trying different styles. And that's when you see it's going to be something different. And then when he takes her to, you know, meet everyone, oh, she's a missionary, she's very religious, can she stay in the house with you?
Yeah, that was the moment when I realized it was going to be something different. Because,
right.
you know, of course, you know, with the premise and everything, you're thinking, okay, what he's going to be doing is he's going to be hiding this doll in this house, and he's mm-hmm. going to be embarrassed, and someone's going to find it, and then there's, you know, going to be this big revelation or whatever and a big fight.
Mm-hmm.
But he brings her right over to his brother's house. And first of all, he walks over to his brother's house and says, hey, I've got somebody yeah. with me and I really want you to meet her. And they're like, well, great, you know, because they're trying to get him. They know something's wrong. You know, they're trying to get him out and things. And, so the yeah. moment where those two are sitting there open mouth, looking at the doll sitting next to him. And, that's when I knew, okay, this is not what I expected it to be. This is not going to be a typical comedy. Yeah, it's going to be different. And it definitely was. And there were moments like that throughout. And I think that that's when I use the word uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if you're walking a line, and this script at any point on that line could have fallen on either side of this line.
Yeah.
It could have gone into a raunchy comedy, and it never mm-hmm. did. And it could have gone very serious. There was a moment in which, Lars's brother is named Gus, and Gus
I love Gus.
Yeah, I did too.
He's and
I
so
was
real.
I was right there with him the entire time.
Yeah,
yeah. And Gus is thoroughly embarrassed. He just does not know what to do, and not only that, but he has feelings like, is this my fault? Did I do this to him? He's having trouble holding it all together. So he's at work one day, and his coworkers are kind of making fun of him. This is later on.
But well, because they go tell him, yeah.
Yeah, because it becomes public knowledge, which we'll talk about. But they're making fun of him kind of, you know, in a pretty good-hearted way. And then, but you get the feeling that, you know, they're like, you know, hey, this is just nuts, right? And mm-hmm. then later on, they're Lars and the real girl are at a bowling alley. And these same guys show up at the bowling alley, but the bowling alley's full, and they say, oh, look, there's Lars. And they're headed over to Lars. And I cringed because I thought, okay, here we go. You know, so this is the line that I'm walking. And here they go. This is going to be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, they have a really good time. They're all bowling. They're having fun. And
they never
treating each other well. They never bring it up. And,
that's funny.
The script could have gone that way. And it didn't.
And it was funny because you emailed me yesterday that it made you uncomfortable. And I thought, oh, okay, that was more Gus's reaction. And I can see that because it's not a natural situation. It is weird. And you're always kind of on that line. But it's a funny thing. It never occurred to me in watching the movie to think that, for instance, in that scene at the bowling alley, that those guys would ever go over there and be awful.
We've seen it so often.
Well,
in
right,
movies,
but
and
beforehand,
I think
but no, I'm
like
just saying the way
itself.
The movie hit me was I wasn't surprised when that happened, mostly because they kind of, for me, in the front, when you see him in all these different situations where, like, they're the brother and sister, basically, just to back up for a second, you know, the brother and sister take him and Bianca, which is the doll's name, and she becomes her own personality, to the doctor, who's also a psychologist, because they say you have to be up here so far north, and who's like, well, you have to play along. You have to go along with it because it's a delusion. And the brother's like, well, no, he needs to be shut up or something. He's clearly crazy. And she's like, he's not hurting anyone, is he? Has he been violent? Has he, you know, well, he has to work this out. He brought her here for a reason. We don't know what that reason is yet. And so what she does is she says, Bianca has low blood pressure and she needs a treatment once a week. And so she and Lars can kind of chat a little bit during those treatments.
Yeah.
But because of that, the brother says, well, everybody's going to make fun of him. And she says, and you.
Yeah.
And that's the point, is he and the sister-in-law or his wife represent the two different attitudes. They're both embarrassed and horrified.
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's what he was telling the doctor too. When he said they're going to make fun of him, I think she was pointing out to Gus that you're not worried about him.
Right.
You're worried about you.
Exactly. And so the two reactions are, well, one is, of course, he's clearly horrified because this is his brother. Something's really wrong with him. He loves his brother, and that becomes clear. But I think he's really a real guy. I loved that. He was a real normal guy, I thought. He did love his brother. He did care. But he also, oh, my gosh, this is going to be so embarrassing. And the sister-in-law clearly is going to be embarrassed, but women take things a different way, for one thing, because she says, how can we help? Well, it's also not her brother, although she cares about Lars a great deal, you know. But she's more just like, stop it. Don't worry about that. Yes, we'll be embarrassed, but whatever. So these are the two different ways that people react. And so when they go to the church group to say, okay, he's really, you know, he likes to come to church, and can he bring Bianca? Because he's going to want to. He says she's pretty religious. She's a missionary. Yeah,
while Gus is squirming right next to her the entire time.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
You know, because he's worried about what these people are going to say.
Right.
Well, you know, and as you talk, I realize how much I really, really liked the female characters in this movie. I really liked Karen, and the lady that you're just about to get to, what was her name? Started with a G. Gruner?
Mrs. Gruner,
and the doctor.
Yeah.
They were all really amazing characters.
Right.
And very well played, too.
Well, yeah, because the doctor was very understated. And I have to say, the screenplay was written by a woman, because we watched some little feature on there that it wasn't, you know, like one of those features where it changes the way you saw the movie necessarily, except that the way the screenwriter was talking about it. And the producer said they really didn't change anything about the movie, which is unusual. She goes, this is pretty much locked from the minute we all read it.
Wow.
And everybody was talking about they read the script and they couldn't wait to be a part of it because they thought it was so loving, caring, you know, as well as funny and sad at the same time kind of thing. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, but the thing I was thinking though, is that what you see in that church group is you see all the reactions of the people. There are the people like Mrs. Gruner who says, well, we've all got somebody weird near us.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other people.
That was so great. I just want to dwell on that just for a second. But Mrs. Gruner, you know, she's like, hey, your nephew puts dresses on dogs.
Right.
And you, your ex-wife was a kleptomaniac. And he says, she was not, you know. Then why is she buried in a pair of my earrings?
Yeah.
And she constantly, you know, I know a person just like her.
Yeah.
And you look at that and you appreciate, yeah, it's like all of a sudden I see her place in society and how important she is. You know, it's those people
check.
Are important. Yeah, those people are important.
Well,
anyway, I love that character. I love Mrs. Gruner a lot.
Well, and in a way, I'm just kind of thinking over this because there were things that I noticed about the movie since it was the third time I was watching it, and mm-hmm. I was watching it for this, that I made notes of, and I was looking at later going, you know what, that line's in there, but maybe I'm reading too much into it. And I'm thinking about it going, no, Mrs. Gruner is the reality check that all Christians need to have of not becoming too goody-goody and too sanctimonious, like the other couple. That was there, the older couple that was protesting, like, oh, we are not going to be sitting there with any such doll. And that's when she starts going around going, oh, really? Because this, this, this. And basically everybody there has some oddball relative that everybody just kind of, oh, well, that's
so. And then the flip side of that older couple is kind of a middle-aged couple who seems to be okay with anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's also a problem, right? I mean,
right.
It's like, you know, both sides. And then Mrs. Gruner is the one who
she says this is
the reality of it, people.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
you're like, yeah, sure, yeah, whatever.
And the pastor then says, well, I guess we have to ask that question.
Mm-hmm.
What would Jesus do? And the brother's like, oh, because they all know what that means. And the next thing you see, Bianca's in church.
That's right. Yeah.
But the funny thing also is the way, I have to say, of all the fine actors in this, Ryan Gosling, what a standout he was as Lars.
Yeah, he sure was. He did a really good job. When I was watching it, I remember thinking that, you know, this is a role that Johnny Depp would have liked younger, if he was younger.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
when he was more honest as an actor.
Yeah, when he was younger.
I've
liked almost all of Johnny Depp's movies, and I've always admired how, you know, when he was from 21 mm-hmm. Jump Street, he could have just mm-hmm. kept doing that kind of stuff, but he didn't. He did these odd, quirky roles all the time, and
I thought
this would have worked for him.
What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Yeah, there's one. Yeah,
that's a nut.
Benny and June is one that I love.
Yeah, although that one does go into more the embarrassing and the hurtful stuff than this.
I thought he was brilliant in that movie.
Yeah, that kind of a portrayal.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing was, I thought was funny also is I could never remember who it is. You know, I had to write his name down. Because he's one of those chameleon actors where he's really good. He plays a lot of different roles if you look at his career. And every time you'll see him being mentioned like, oh, and Ryan Gosling is this in Drive, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I never saw Drive because when the girls went to see, I heard it was really great, super violent. But I'm like, well, I'm kind of okay with that depending on how they show it. And the girls came back and they said, wow, it was really good, but I have never seen so many creative ways to murder people. And I was like, okay, not going to watch that movie probably.
Wow.
And, but they were like, and Ryan Gosling, who knew he had it in him to play that cold-blooded, but charismatic, you know, and I went, oh, you don't think of that when you think of watching Lars.
Yeah. And the last movie that I saw with Ryan Gosling, and maybe the only one, was Crazy Stupid Love.
Which is one that's on my list. I've heard it was really good.
Yeah, and Ryan, he's completely different in that movie.
Did you like that movie?
I did. Yeah,
okay.
I've had it
recommended by a variety mm-hmm. of people, so.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's completely different in that
yeah.
one.
Which yeah, which is nice to see somebody.
And that's why I kind of bring up Johnny Depp, because I felt like throughout his career, he was mm-hmm. like that in the movies.
I think
this type of person, you know, he's very good.
Yeah. Well, and I think Johnny Depp has gotten kind of lazy lately about the kind of directors that he works with and the roles that he takes.
Yeah. A lot of Tim Burton's.
It'd be great to see him do a smaller movie like this where he has to dig deep and show us again what he's got.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a side note.
Sure.
Because I love Johnny Depp. I could look at those pictures of him all day long. Oh, wait, did I say that out loud? But one of the things that I was thinking, though, is that little scene of them talking to the people, being embarrassed, asking for their acceptance of this mental illness, which is, as the doctor says, she goes, it's not always something that's an illness. Sometimes it's you're trying to communicate. That's what the whole movie is about. It's how do people react to Lars and his trying to work out whatever problem it is that he has. And kind of by the couple broaching their friends, you know, the guys joke about it in a very guy-like way. Oh, I wish I had a woman that didn't talk, or does she have a sister? To the women going, she's really got everything. And the sister-in-law's like, oh, yes. And they're laughing and giggling over lunch. Well, she really is one of the girls. You know, that's how girls would laugh about it. But kind of what that does is you can imagine them telling people and going, yeah, but you know, it's Lars. He's okay guy. And I'm friends with so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the goodwill that they've built up over the years of living there that makes the town embrace Bianca. And they embrace her to the point of, this is the thing that I thought was interesting. Lars is expressing his deepest desires through this doll. He wants somebody who's got faith. He wants to be married. He wants a companion who will share the things that, you know, he takes her and shows her where he played when he was growing up. He shows her his mother's grave. And a big key point of this is that his mother died in childbirth. And that marked him. And then he lived with a father who was full of regret, and his brother had left as soon as he could.
Mm-hmm.
So he grew up in a very difficult situation. But you wind up with Bianca then. Somebody says, hey, he's pushing her through the mall. Would she like a part-time job at the store? And so they're kind of playing with her doing that. And they take her and they, you know, the hairstylist is, I think her hair would look better like this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now, did you feel like
she's volunteering at the hospital? She's elected to the school board.
that made me laugh.
So you feel like the whole town is kind of entering into the spirit of playing.
Yeah, playing and helping him.
And I kind of felt like, when that started to happen,
I thought, you know, that's going to be the perfect thing for him, because what they're doing is they're taking her away from him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was wondering, you know, in my head, I thought, you know, I wonder if the doctor was saying, hey, you know, you ought to do that. Or didn't Mrs. Gruner have something to do with that the first time?
She started off with her volunteering at the hospital.
At the hospital,
because
she thought
that the kids would love her.
Yeah. And I felt like they were doing that to help him. As in, you know, hey, if we take her away from him now and then, he'll maybe learn how to live without her. That was my first impression.
Yeah. And I don't know if most of those people thought about it that much, other than like, see, I got the impression, and maybe Mrs. Gruner did, but I got the impression that the part-time job thing, I could just imagine somebody going, I would love to dress her up in different clothes.
Yeah.
And to have her sit around the store. That'd be fun, because that's what that person does. How boring is that job working in the clothing store? I can dress up Bianca.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of felt like, you know, the person who then says, oh, what about this? What do you think about this look? And the women, ooh, yeah, because there's something women pay attention to. It's someone's hairstyle. So the hairstylist is having fun and the other women are going, oh, yeah, objectively speaking, that would look better on her. So I felt like eventually that's what happens, but that's also kind of what happens as she's getting taken away. Lars starts reacting. They all start treating her like she's more of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
She's a character in their lives. And you don't see tons of that, except that when he comes home because he's had a really bad day, because he's seen the real girl, whose name is actually Margot in the movie, talking to a guy at work who she's dating. And he starts getting more and more upset as he notices it. So you see what happens is this kind of frees him up to, because he's in a safe relationship. He can look at this girl who would ask him if he wanted to go to the birthday party or whatever it was, and he was too shy to talk. He's now more settled. He could be friends with her because that pressure's taken off. And he gets angry, and then he goes home, and he and Bianca have their first fight. Because she's going to go to, what, like the school board meeting or the school board banquet, and that's their night to play Scrabble.
Right.
And she didn't write it on the calendar, and he got, well, she go in the, or she didn't. He didn't check the calendar. Well, her calendar's on the refrigerator. Did you check it? And that's when Mrs. Gruner later takes him outside because he's yelling at her. He sends Karen, his sister-in-law, Mrs. Gruner downstairs because they're getting her all dressed up for the banquet. And he's yelling, and Mrs. Gruner's like, I don't like his tone. And they put her in the car, and then she goes, you listen to me, young man. She's got a life of her own. You expect her to sit home all day? So what comes out is, she goes, he sounds just like my husband. This is some of Mrs. Gruner's frustration or life experience coming out, going, I'm not going to see somebody else go through what I don't like. So it's kind of an interesting, she turns into an interesting sounding board because she's her own person, so to speak.
So it is what you said about communication. I mean, she's almost like a conduit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he's so angry later and he's trying to chop wood, which I was terribly, see, that's when I was like, he's going to chop his foot off. and the sister-in-law's out there and he's pissed off at everyone because he's just mad and he doesn't understand why. And he's like, nobody cares about me. You just care about Bianca. She's like, are you kidding me? Every time we get her dressed and give her a bath and they actually show them bathing her. And, you know, take her to these things. We're doing it because we love you. And that's such a great speech because it's the heart of the movie. And she can do it from the point of view of, this is a doll and we're putting up with her for the sake of you. And he can look at it as, this person that I love, they're doing it. They're extending this to her because they love me.
Mm-hmm.
He gets it.
Yeah.
It works both ways. And that's a huge turning point in the movie because that's, he suddenly starts to have to break away, really break away. And after that comes that wonderful scene, which you could probably comment on more than me, with his brother, where he's like, what does it, Bianca was talking about rites of passage that they have in, because she's from Brazil.
Yeah.
they have in Brazil. And, you know, we don't have those here. How do you know when you're a man?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that was a very interesting talk, because Gus is, again, you know, he's still uncomfortable with it, but he's carrying some stuff with him
the whole time. I love that, Gus. He never gets lost in the fantasy ever.
No. And Lars, of course. How could I forget his name? Yeah, Lars.
Yeah.
But you know, so Lars, his mom died in childbirth and he's carrying that with him, and his dad must have had guilt and a whole bunch of issues because Gus left as soon as he could. So it's never clear how old Lars was when Gus left.
Right.
But during that little talk, Lars says, hey, you know, how do you know that you're a man? And Gus's answer is really good. You know, he says, you know, when you you don't cheat on your woman and you grow up enough, it's as if he's saying you grow up enough to consider other people's feelings and not just yourself. And the most poignant moment to me was when he apologized to Lars for leaving so quickly. He said, I didn't think about you. And he was saying, I was not a man when I left you. And then Lars says, oh, that was okay. And you're like,
but the brother says, no, it really wasn't.
Yeah.
You know, he won't let him pass it off. Well, because he says you grow up when you decide to do what's right for everybody, even when it hurts you.
Mm. Yeah.
And I was like, that's one of the most beautiful encapsulations of adult responsibility. And the fact that to be a true mature person means to sacrifice yourself for other people's good.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And the funny thing was, I don't know if you noticed, because I didn't notice it till this time. While he's asking him, how do you know what it means to be a man? Because his brother's obviously a man. He's cooking and doing laundry.
Exactly. Yeah, he is.
You know?
Yeah. And that's, I noticed him doing that, but I did not think of it until you just said it.
Well, I didn't. Yeah, it's the third time I've watched it. So, you know, it's such a simple seeming movie, but there are little currents like that that are funny that they put against each other. And it's also funny because Lars later does start doing things that hurt him and hurt his chance for an easy relationship with the real girl, because he's putting into action what his brother says.
Yeah.
You know, she never forgets that Bianca is not real, even though she, you know, will act like it, because after the bowling alley, she's like, oh, hey. And he's like, oh, because Bianca, I can't do anything. She goes, oh, I would never ask that ever. He goes, because a real man doesn't cheat on his woman, which is just what his brother said. So he's taking those steps to being, how do I be my own person then who's really a man?
Yeah.
And I thought there was an exchange they had, because early on, the doctor is talking about a hug or something, and he's like, oh, no, I don't let anyone touch me, because a hug hurts like you're frozen and then you're thawing out, it burns.
Yeah.
He can't stand to have anyone even just touch him with a finger. And later, after he's rejected any kind of like little overt lure that the real girl has thrown out, and, you know, he says, because a man doesn't cheat on his woman, it's snowing. And he says, oh, I was hoping winter was over. And she says, no, it's just a thaw. Winter isn't over till Easter. And I was like, yeah, but when you're thawed out, you're... And Tom looked at me and he goes, Easter, huh? That's an interesting time to pick. And I was like, I know, it's not overt, but he is religious and he is tied into all that. And he's being resurrected before our eyes as somebody different than the person he was before, who was not really alive. So that's really probably kind of reaching it. But it just kind of struck me as what are the fake things that we hold on to, who we think are real? What do we delude ourselves about? And what do we learn to sacrifice for other people when we become fully the people we're supposed to be?
Yeah.
I was thinking life as a Christian.
And I was thinking, you know, of life as a Christian and how you deal with other people. So I guess I wasn't really in my head dealing with Lars himself. I was dealing with more how the community relates with Lars and how that affects my own life. You know, how do I treat people that I think are different? And as Christians, are we doing it correctly? You know, and a lot of times the answer is no. And again, with Mrs. Gruner telling us how we're supposed to, you know, in no uncertain terms.
Yeah, and for me, a big part of that was the party where he was he takes Bianca to a party, and it's clear he doesn't ever go to this kind of thing because he's reassuring Bianca, it'll be okay. And
and maybe it says a lot about my cynicism about human nature, but again, he's pulling her up the stairs in this wheelchair.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is not going to go well. That's all I could think in my head. I was like, oh boy, I don't even want to see this. You know, and he goes in there and everybody accepts him, and wow, he has a wonderful night.
Well, and although the thing is they aren't accepting him like, oh, Lars, this is great. I mean, there are a few people. The thing is I think, again, key is the person whose birthday it is has always been, hey, Lars, when he comes in. She's the receptionist at the company he works for. She's always kind of been throwing out those friendly comments that he would ignore and scuttle by. So she and Margot, the real girl, are the two people there who are really like, oh, and this is Bianca. Is this for me? Because Bianca has a bottle of wine in her lap. And, you know, Margot, oh, let me take everybody's coats. And so the receptionist's husband is kind of like giving her looks, but he's like, okay. And the people who are friends of the sister-in-law, the women, at one point, they're all sitting around having wine and talking to Lars, and they're kind of talking about Bianca as if she's real. But at the same time, they're giving each other these looks like, this is insane, but okay. And they're like, well, I need some more wine for sure. So it's a toleration even. But it's a toleration within the limits that he can just kind of ignore it, because he's so delusional that he's not going to be sensitive to that. And the fact that they're accepting it on the surface. So it was interesting looking at those are the same people that later on it turns into a more full blown acceptance. And that's kind of shown with the husband who's by the end of the evening, he's dancing with Bianca in her chair because, you know, you've had a lot to drink. The music's up. What are you going to do? You're going to dance with the doll in the chair because it's fun. And it shows a gentle love and acceptance of somebody, despite the fact that they're weird. It shows that they love him even though they don't understand him. And that is what we're called to do. You're right.
And that is what we're called to do. And that is what we don't always do.
That's the thing I try to remember. And there was a great quote that, because I'll tell you the one I hate is God made me and God don't make junk. I just think that's so easy.
Mm-hmm.
But I did read one. I think, I can't remember who said it though, which was that, I think it was Thérèse of Lisieux who said when she had came up against people she couldn't stand, and there were some, and she said, I try to remember that Christ is the great artist. And what artist does not love to have his art appreciated and loved? So I try to love the art that Christ made in these people that I can't really appreciate. And I always try to remember that when I come up against people where I'm like, oh, you're driving me crazy. I'm not successful a lot of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like most of us. But I try to remember that. It kind of helps me pass bumps.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's what I thought of most in this movie.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. For me, there was one unresolved moment I wanted to talk to you about to see what you thought about it. Mm-hmm. Gus's wife is pregnant throughout the whole movie. And it seemed to me that they were kind of building up to the birth of that child, but we never ever saw the birth of that child. Did you feel the same way? Did you feel like it was, you know, it was mentioned at least a couple times how hard this was going to be for Lars?
Yeah, because that's what sets it all off is his mother died in childbirth. And when he finds out that his sister-in-law, who he's very fond of, is pregnant, he's terrified she's going to die also.
Right.
That's what it is.
So it seemed to me that that was the trigger of what began this. And there was a big moment with the doctor where the doctor mentioned it. And then he got up and got very agitated.
Right.
And he was like, I'm really having problems with this. You know, I'm worried that she's going to die.
Yeah.
And then, but then it just, I think I would have really have loved to have seen the birth of that child and his reaction to it.
Interesting. Because, yeah, I suppose, but I never felt that way. And I guess thinking about it, it's because for me, it was never about the baby. The baby was the trigger of every other problem he had in his life with dealing with people.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, the trigger was the fact that he has to be able to relate to people on his own who he has a chance of being with. That's his brother's wife. And although he's very fond of her, it's kind of like, you know, his sister-in-law is as unapproachable as his mother in terms of a personal relationship. And I didn't feel like it was all about personal relationship, but he so clearly longed for and needed love and to be able to reach people on his own that I just felt like, although that was the trigger, for me, the key moment that needed to happen was when they were by Bianca's graveside and Margot says, but she was like nobody else. I'm still sad, but I'll never forget her. Mm-hmm. And he just gets this huge smile on his face and says, do you want to go for a walk? And for me, what I was thinking was, wow, it would have been great to see them hold hands. Or although she did put her hand on his arm one point earlier when they were outside the bowling alley and he got this look on his face because it didn't burn.
Yeah.
You could see. But, or walk away or something. And I thought, well, it's kind of wise of them to leave it unresolved. It's just that this is the resurrection. The hope of the new day is there for them. You know, Bianca is dead. All that stuff that he had before is dead. And what he needed was, yeah, the baby would come, but, and he'd be a part of its life and everything. But what he needed was somewhere else. So I guess I didn't ever care if the baby was born.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I felt that that was something that was unresolved to me.
Honestly, I'll tell you, here's how bad I am. I just mm-hmm. looked at it this time and went, you know, they kept making Emily Mortimer's stomach bigger because, but they didn't make her boobs bigger. And I'm just saying, okay, pregnant lady, I don't care how small you are. That's got to happen too. So there was something wrong there. I kept it toward the end. I kept going, I just can't look at that because it's wrong. Yeah. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, as we talk about it some more, if Bianca was his way of resolving the entire thing with his mom. Mm-hmm. So when she died and he had the funeral, that was him finally being able to put that away.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah. You know, I think, you know, a scene, you know, when that baby's born and if he held the baby and smiled, I think that would have been cool.
Yeah. Well, maybe they thought about it. I don't know. That's interesting. I thought it was interesting because they were looking at it from the point of view of that I never thought of when that extra feature about the screenwriter.
Mm-hmm.
She was saying that she said she's had a lot of jobs on the margin in her life, which makes me think that I think that's where you run into people who are less covered up than people in the mainstream. You know, they'll let their insecurities and other things show more with other people. I could be wrong. But she was saying that she came across that website, realdoll.com, and she was looking around and she started thinking, and this is the thing I think is great about whoever wrote this, who I can't remember her name. She didn't look at it.
Nancy Beatty?
Okay.
Right? Yeah, I've
Nancy
just got
Beatty.
It.
I think you're a heck of a gal.
I'm sorry, Nancy Oliver.
Nancy
bad.
Oliver.
Nancy Oliver, yeah.
I think you're a hell of a gal. Because instead of like me going, oh, disgusting for sick people, she looked at it and thought, how desperate do you have to be to do this, to find love or any kind of idea of intimacy? And she was like, what happens to those desperate people? How do they cope? And how do we treat them? And that's what made her start thinking of a really desperate person, but in a normal society, what would happen and how would he translate that desperate need? And that's where the movie came from. And I hadn't thought about it in terms of desperate people, but haven't we all had those times in our life when we have felt desperate? We haven't acted like Lars, or it hasn't gotten to that level maybe. But I remember when I was single, sometimes I felt desperately lonely, really. I mean, and this is before I had any idea if there was God or not, but I really remember clearly one evening, and I was maybe 22 or 23, I was living in Dodge City, Kansas, and I didn't have a lot of friends because, for one thing, it wasn't a big town, but and I didn't go to church or have a other society outside of work, really. Sitting on the steps in the evening outside my apartment, just kind of looking up the sky going, isn't there anyone for me? You know, that desperate feeling inside where you're just crying out. You don't even know who to. And maybe it's not about that, but, you know, when it goes that far, when it keeps going and going and going, and you can't pull back and go, well, sometime, like I did, or like any normal person does when, you know, something bad is happening. You go, well, okay, I got through this, and I'll just keep going, and it will or won't happen, and I'll cope. But what if you can't cope?
Yeah.
What if you have no mechanism? Like you say, how do we treat them? But I don't know. I just think it was great that she turned it into such a sweet, loving piece that really looked at the potential good in everybody.
Yeah, and I think that's it right there. You know, it looked at the potential good in everybody. And I kept expecting the bad.
Mm-hmm.
And which says something in itself. And that's why when I called my discomfort a success for the movie, because I do think that fed right into what the point of it was.
Yeah. Do you cast that person out or do you try to help them somehow, even if it makes you really uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm.
How often do we fight against that impulse instead of just going, easier for me to just ignore them or turn away or whatever?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without
definitely.
Question. Yep.
Well, and that's Rose was pointing out. She's, and it's the same thing you just said, and I hadn't thought about it this way. She goes, yeah, it's unusual because most movies don't deal with that kind of a situation that positively. And I hadn't really thought about other movies. And then you said that, and I was like, well, yeah, you're right. We've been led to expect, let's get gritty and let's get real.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, it's like a conditioning that I have, that when those guys showed up at that bowling alley, mm-hmm. I was sure that was not going to be a good scene, mm-hmm. you know, because I've seen it so many times before.
Right.
You know.
Well, and I guess that's why I thought it was interesting. After you brought that up, I was thinking about it and went, there was only one time when anybody started to act ugly and disgusting to him about it.
Mm-hmm.
And he just was oblivious because he was in his delusion, and he walks away. And it was kind of a geeky guy looking guy who was being, you know, about the sex and everything, but obliquely.
Mm-hmm.
And Lars walks away, and the person who defends Lars is his cubicle mate, who's the one who watches porn all the time. And he's got a running battle over what action figures in his cubicle with the real girl. And I mean, he's kind of he's the closest to a raunchy character there is. And he's the one who's like, cut it out. Cause they can see, you know, this isn't the time for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that does point to that's the thaw that Easter brings in that sense. It's that we all have that potential. Will we live up to it and push ourselves to do it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I did come away with that feeling at the end, you know, it was, you know, did make me think of those kinds of thoughts. And it made me think about, you know, if in relation to the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. how we do accept that there's a lot of different cultures and things that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's huge. How could it be different? And it has to be big, you know,
yeah.
If you're looking at the church, that's the truth, that it would have to be, it would have to be huge and all encompassing.
If you're trying to identify the real humanity in each person and bring Christ to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've got Benedictines and Jesuits and lay people and a lot of people experiencing things in different ways.
Well,
they're all valid. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's funny because you said that, and you're right. There's all these different ways of expressing your religion in that way. And then I thought of also, you know, there's the African Catholic Church. There's mm-hmm. the American Catholic Church. There's, you know, as it's expressed in cultures. And then I started thinking of Rose, who's now living in L.A., and she tried going to this one little church that she's like, it was really small. And she goes, I have never heard fire and brimstone preached by a Catholic priest, but wow. And so she was trying another parish. And I said, oh, well, David Scott, who works with the diocese, had told me that St. Vincent's in Hollywood is doing great work. I said, I don't know what that means, but maybe it's a bigger church with some volunteer opportunities, which is more what she's used to here. And she tried it. And she said, you know, it's a funny thing. She really liked the way the church felt. She said, you know, the homilies vary depending on the priest. And I said, well, you know, we looked it up because we're talking on Skype, which is a great invention for making you feel close. And I said, oh, I see they have a big outreach to the gay community, which isn't a surprise in Hollywood. And she goes, no. She says, there were quite a few well-dressed gentlemen. She goes, I'm not sure how many of them would have been attracted to me, but there were quite a few well-dressed gentlemen in the congregation, not many families. And she said with just this twinkle in her eye, and it was kind of that feeling of that you get from Lars and the real girl. She's not going to try to change these people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is a vehicle in the church to help people who are gay live with the way the faith is expressed there. You know, that group courage.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, yeah, and they've got a chapter of courage there. And she's like, but she was thinking about volunteering and, you know, that kind of thing. And I was like, I love that whole thing comes together in something that feels like a real expression of Christ.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's another culture.
Right.
That,
right.
You know, everybody's there. It is hard. It's hard to do the right thing. And it's hard to live a good life the way, you know, you hope Christ wants you to. And outside of God's grace, we have to try. And maybe it's the practice. That's the other thing I thought. The people who were awkward with it in the beginning got more and more comfortable with being kind to Lars through Bianca, because that's the way they could show it. And maybe that's us. You just have to keep trying and trying.
Yeah, and that's another really great point. I mean, the way you just put that is, you know, they were kind to Lars through Bianca. I know you said that earlier, but it just clicked in my head that, you know, it must have been frustrating for the people. Well, it was really epitomized with the receptionist who kept giving him cards or whatever, and he just wouldn't respond. But being nice to Bianca got her the response that she was hoping for from Lars.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's how he could receive the love. He couldn't receive it in the other way. He understood it, but he just couldn't receive it.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you show it when they can receive it? And it makes me, because it made me think of a person who, I love this person so much. She's come to our book club, and she's got, what is it? Just very mild Asperger's. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, which just, it, you know, really, I don't know how much these labels really count, but basically just, you know, she's awkward socially and has a hard time expressing herself in a way that's acceptable to everyone for give and take. But as time has gone on and she's gotten more comfortable with us, she started blooming, and it was really hard for her to come to our group because she doesn't go to our church. She just came because I invited her on my blog, and or anybody on my blog. And but because of her, and I love her so much, and I'm kind of used to how you talk to her and respond and listen in a way that's effective so that we can both have a great conversation, I now can identify other people I have trouble talking to, like on the phone and stuff. And I'll go, oh, this person's driving me crazy. And I'll go, oh, wait, it's kind of like so-and-so.
Mm.
And I kind of make this mental shift, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. But it's the practice and the going, you know what? It's a little awkward, but I'm going to just do it anyway. It's, you know, and that's a very slight thing, but I don't come across that many people who might not fit right in.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's neat. Yeah. So again, I come away feeling much better about the movie than I did coming in. And I say this in almost every podcast, but now I want to watch it again.
Well, I do that too with stuff. I mean, it's just, you know, it's that give and take. I've always loved Lars's brother.
Yeah.
But listening to you talk about it made me understand the real depth that's there of that character communicating for how really you do feel.
Mm-hmm.
And look how hard it was for him. And he, and you saw the awkwardness up to the very end, but he still did it because as you saw that, you saw more and more the love for his brother coming through.
Yeah.
You got to, you know.
Yeah, without question, he loved his brother, you know.
Yeah.
And
that's... Yeah.
Yeah. The actor was excellent too. What was his name?
Mm-hmm.
Paul Schneider.
Schneider.
Yeah.
Because I looked him up. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not related to Roy, is he?
I wonder. So.
I don't think so either.
He'd be a nephew or something, I guess.
Huh? Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, he's definitely younger, but
I liked him a lot. Yeah. He was excellent.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm actually, I was kind of distressed when you said, you know, you were uncomfortable with it and you didn't like it or hate it. And I went, well, it was my turn to have one that didn't click. But I'm glad you told me that because it made me think about the movie differently than I would have. So, see, that's the benefit I get is
good. Yeah.
I wouldn't have gone back and thought through it in that way. So,
well, excellent.
And that's kind of the challenge in the faith, too.
Yeah, it sure is. You're right.
What makes you uncomfortable, I have to think it through again and understand that other point of view.
Yeah, I had a really interesting discussion with, you know, at Catholic education class that we're doing for middle school age kids.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the point that I had to make for them, too. You know, we were talking about how, you know, how things are passed down to us, you know, from the church. And what do you do when there's something that you disagree with or you are uncomfortable with?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, looking into it is the answer. You know, through your various ways of doing that. You know, so try and give them the tools to do that. But the thing is, as I've found, and I've heard you say as well, that when those things happen, if you start to look into it, you start to understand the whys. It's not just a directive, you know, that thou shalt do this, although I guess it is that, but there's reasons for it all. And, by looking into it, and there's 2,000 years worth of people thinking about it, you can always find things that, that make you understand what that is, you know, and so you can come to terms with those things. And
Because I had that experience with, we're helping with RCIA, and there are a few people who have more questions and more problems, you know. RCIA, for non-Catholics, maybe I've said this before, it's Rite of Christian Initiation for Adults. It's basically classes to learn about Catholicism, and you take several months worth of them once a week before you join the church at Easter. And this one person wrote and said, well, I have these problems with, you know, these various issues. And she goes, and I really hate the idea that you, the answer, if you have a problem, is just to pray and accept it and let God change your heart. And I was like, I wrote back and I was like, okay, I don't know who told you that, but they're completely wrong. And I didn't bother being tactful. I was like, that has never been the church's point of view ever. And it's like you're saying, it's the church's point of view is you don't understand it. We have more, but we don't give more every time because some people don't need that.
Yeah.
It's enough to just hear thou shalt not whatever. Oh, that makes sense. They'll look into something different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The problem that, that I have, you know, for those who don't know, we're in a very, very small church. You know, if everybody shows up, I've got about 40 or, you know, 40 people show up. If everybody shows up,
that's hard.
So that it is. So, you know, it's a largely LDS community, probably 90% Mormons. So often these kids learn about their faith through Mormons because Mormons tell them, hey, I heard that blah, blah, blah. And, and they just don't ask the question. So in the class setting, I try and make sure that they can ask anything that they want, you know, and you try to open that up. And this last one, boy, it was like floodgates. It was really a good one. And, they asked a lot of questions and they had as many questions. All right. You know, what do the Mormons believe about this? And, you know, how is that different from this? And, you know, really what I've been trying to do over the last couple of weeks is, you know, how do you know what's true? And talking to them about that and when why feeling is not the only thing that you need to be paying attention to. In fact, you know, it's perfectly valid to feel really good about something that's not good for you.
Yeah.
And that's an LDS thing is they talk a lot about feelings.
Oh, if it feels right.
Yeah.
Well, that's, everybody in this class are Protestant. There aren't anybody from it outside of a Christian belief. And they all tend to be Baptist or non-denominational Protestant of some sort that's not quite evangelical, which I don't understand exactly the differentiation. Luckily, I don't have to. There's a couple of converts helping with the class who have got us covered on that. But it's the same kind of thing. They come from a background of if you ask questions, you're wrong. Do not question because then you're going against God's will. Not the Baptist, really, but this one lady especially. And it was that kind of idea of, other people have taught me this. And so you spend most of the classes are, okay, for people who don't have any idea, here's why. And for all of you who've heard all these other reasons, here's why those are all wrong. And here's what you can tell your friends and your relatives and your spouses and your everybody. So yeah, it's that same thing because that's when the questions start up.
Yeah. And that is one of the advantages of being a small church is, you know, you've got smaller classes. So when you're talking to them, you know, the opportunities for that are great. And as long as you can get them to open up.
I was just thinking how different our churches are because mine has 5,000 or 6,000 families registered.
Wow.
Now, that doesn't mean everybody comes. Or
yeah, that's amazing. You know. Yeah.
But yeah, so we've got about 3,300 coming every weekend. Wow. We have 7 masses on the weekends.
Yeah. So yeah, my experience is we go to church here in my town. There's not a Catholic church. We use the First Presbyterian Church, which they are awful kind to let us use.
Yeah.
Our priest comes in on Mondays. So Monday night at about 5:30, we have mass. And then I usually teach class to the kids after. And on a normal day, we'll probably have about 20 people come. And, you know, so if everybody comes, we'll have about 40.
Wow.
You know, with all the,
That must be more of a Presbyterian or Protestant kind of a feel too, that small group, you know, everybody.
Yeah, I guess, you know, and I grew up in a larger church. I couldn't tell you how many people were going there, and, you know, it's kind of neat every now and then when I show the, I want to take the kids on a bus to a cathedral or something. I mean, I feel like I want to do that all the time because they need to know that there's other kids. you know, sometimes I feel that. And we have youth conferences in Idaho, and there's one coming up that our priest has been talking about, and I don't know if anybody from here will go, but, you know, we encourage them to, it is a different deal, but it's good.
Just different.
Yeah. We have a lot less of the contention that you have, you know, that comes sometimes when you have a lot of people there that are, you know, we don't have any of that. It's like the pure faith distilled, you know, the priest likes to come here because there aren't any problems and he comes and he's not having to deal with this person or that person. He gets to do mass and we get to talk, and it's generally a really positive thing.
Yeah. You all get to know him. That sounds more like our, the scripture study that our priest has had for some time, where we keep saying only about 20 or 30 people ever come to this thing. And he's such a great guy. And, you know, you learn so much, and we're thinking there's how many thousands of people who go to this church and they're missing this opportunity.
Yeah.
But you get that all the time. You get to talk to him and know him.
Oh, yeah, and our priest absolutely really loves it when we ask him something. Oh, he just uses, here's how it is. I love that, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he connects really well.
Well, that's why the RCIA class, which is about, of course, I don't know, because there's spouses and sponsors who are showing up with the people. But I know in years past, they've had like 85 people coming into the church on Sunday, kind of on Easter Sunday. I don't think it'll be that many this year. But what happens then is you break up later into small groups. So there are maybe 15 people in each group or so, and there's 4 or 5 groups. Yeah. And that's what Tom and I help with.
Oh, yeah.
That's, we're like small group facilitators so that we can answer questions or...
Oh, that's the way to do that. That's
give
great.
Give them a aspect. Yeah,
you know, in the education and everything, you know, I've learned a lot about how much different a person usually, you know, I'm talking about kids usually, but just general for people in a smaller group, they speak up better, you know.
Yeah.
In a large group, they may be too embarrassed to say, I don't understand what you just said, but in a small group, they are willing to do that.
It's funny because in the large group, I've noticed there are 2 or 3 people now who they already know the answer. They're going to convert, but they know the answer. But they're raising the question so that it will get addressed for everybody else who might be thinking it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Because one person, I stopped her later and I said, now you understand that wasn't really a very good answer. And there's a different answer. I mean, a more reason to it. And she goes, oh, I already knew that. I was asking because it wasn't getting brought up and I was disappointed by the answer. So she goes, hopefully people will ask it in their small group. And I went, oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
Gotcha.
So it's funny that way.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
So that was a side trip through parish differences in parishes. Yeah, because I know I was thinking we have 3 Catholic high schools because it's Dallas.
Oh,
how it's
cool
big.
Is that? Yeah.
And, you know, all these little parish schools. So it's just a different experience altogether.
Yeah, up the road in Pocatello, about 50 miles from here, there is a Catholic high school.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. So we're not that far removed. It just feels like it sometimes.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, just... It'd be kind of nice. Well, you're kind of like in Lars's situation, really.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the kind of town I live in.
Yeah, actually, I could see where it'd be a problem because you can't get away from the people who are bugging you. But on the other hand, it gives you the potential to be much closer.
Yeah, I think generally it's a very positive thing, a small town. You know, when you're raising kids and things, you know, if you have a car in town that's kind of driving around, seeing what's going on, everybody knows it doesn't belong, and everybody watches out for each other. So you've got that aspect.
That's really good.
Yeah. And the negative aspect of that is people are driving around, seeing what's going on. And they all know each everybody other's knows business. Everybody's business. That's right.
Well, and I was surprised. Actually, you can have that in it. It's not the same. Hmm. And I like the small town feel a lot, having lived in small towns. But because I kind of limit, I realized I always thought I lived in a 5 mile radius from my house. I actually tend to live in a 1 mile radius from my house because, you know, our office is a mile away.
Mm.
We finally managed to move it close enough over the years.
Good. Cool.
And, you know, the grocery store I go to is about a mile away. Our church is a mile in a different direction. And I don't really need to go to a lot of other places because it's Dallas. We have so many things here. But Tom and I have started walking to work when we can because we suddenly went, it's only a mile away. You have to cross a 8-lane highway. But other than that, it's not a big deal. And there is a light. But so what we've discovered is how many people we know after having lived in this 1 mile radius for so long, because we've had all these people come up to talk to us at different times and going, now, did your car break down? Because I saw you walking by the side of the road, and Tom's had people stop to offer him lifts and things.
Oh,
and I'm
yeah.
like, oh, I didn't, you know, I've had like 6 different people. You know, oh, I saw you walking, you know.
Yeah, and that happens here, too. One summer, I tried to walk to work. It takes me about a half an hour to walk to work from where I'm at. And, yeah, everybody would stop. And it became, you know, like, oh, you know, because I know everybody.
Yeah.
So this car's driving by and they stop. Hey, you need a ride? No, I'm doing this on purpose. You know, and thank you very much. And,
but it's nice.
It's nice, but yeah, it's almost like you're putting everyone else out by walking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then you can become eccentric for that. That's Tom and I are now slightly eccentric for that. I'm like, you know what? I kind of embrace that. That's fine.
Which it should be embraced.
Yeah,
I think everybody could walk more. I know I need to.
Oh gosh! Yeah. Oh, heaven only knows I do. But yes, now I keep trying to talk him into taking our dog up to work since it's just the one dog, and he's resisting that. He's like, "That we're in an office building. That's not going to work." I'm like, "Oh, the dog wouldn't care." He's like, "Yes, but it's not businesslike." I'm like, "Okay, he's not going to let me become a small town eccentric that much."
Oh, that's fun.
So,
well, cool.
Okay, so. All right.
Let's
see.
Next? Oh, now, Lifestyle of the Software Objects is next by Ted Chiang.
That's right.
Really looking forward to that. And then I did go ahead and select the next movie.
Okay.
Because it came up last time and I thought, hey, why not? Let's do it. In Bruges. We're going to do that. Yeah.
Right? Now, there's a movie that'll make people uncomfortable.
There you go. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. I have seen it, and I really like it. And
it's so good.
I'm very excited to talk about it. Yep.
This will be my third time to see that movie, too.
Oh, good. Cool.
Yeah. Wow. And it's such a great movie. And we'll be in Lent.
Yes. Oh, which is perfect.
Next time will be, I guess this will come out on the Thursday after Ash Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
Right? Something like that.
Yes.
In a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
fantastic. Yeah. And hey, what about your booklet? Let's talk about that really fast.
What?
Your book. Not Happy Catholic, but the other one.
Oh, yeah, that.
I'm trying to remember what it's called.
Lord, Open My Heart.
There it is. Yes.
They named it and they put the little little titles in there.
Right.
So I don't
saw
know
it on
that.
Your blog there. I just called it up there.
I was excited because I thought I was ghostwriting this thing for its called Creative Communications for the Parish. If you go there, they have the Protestant button and the Catholic button. So they do it all. And I think it's designed to be the kind of booklet that a parish could buy and give to their parishioners to help with Lent. And so it's daily reflections on a line or two of scripture from that day's readings. And they're all short because it was to be 200 words or less. And I don't know what I tried to do. I just tried to, I don't know. You've read it.
Yes, I have. And I really, really enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I just think
you said that before, but
yeah,
it's reassuring to me once it's out there.
Yeah, it is really fantastic. Yeah, it's exactly like you described. It's about a 200-word, you know, almost a meditation on a line of scripture for every day during Lent. And, I really enjoyed it and I'm going to go through it during Lent this time. So,
okay. Well, that's really a compliment. Well, yeah, 'cause I think I just tried to think what would help me launch myself into thinking more deeply and immersing myself in Lent more so I could really get whatever it is that God has for me during that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always interesting writing that kind of thing because I was going through Lent mentally during the summer.
Because
that's when I wrote it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll be curious to look at it again. So
yeah, well, it's great. Yeah, I just like it. You know, you communicate very well. You know, oh. I mean, here we are. We're talking movies and things like that. I mean, all that stuff. It's not so much that you brought all that into this, but it's there. So you're talking to me where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not, you know, hugely lofty language and, you know, all this thing. It's you're talking to me when I read that.
I'm definitely accessible.
Yes.
Because
which
I'm
is
normal.
A great thing. It's, you know.
Well, thank you. You're welcome. Thank you very much. And yep. It's the thing I liked is they put it also out for the Kindle and the Nook.
Oh, good.
It's like 99 cents.
Oh, wow. Holy
and smokes. It's $1.59 to get the booklet. I mean, that's yeah. So it's super cheap. Because they're, and that's, I think, the highest they priced it. If you're in a parish and buying it, I think it gets really cheap too to hand out. So
well, excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, well, good. Thank you very much. And I'd forgotten all about it, so I'm glad you mentioned it.
But yeah, I'll be reading it again.
Well, that's a high compliment. I appreciate it very much.
You bet.
And so I guess now I'll have to get busy and pick the next book for after.
Yep, it's your turn, you bet.
I know. We'll announce it for next time.
For sure.
So.
All right.
And
I guess that's it for this week, huh?
We managed to talk a lot more about that movie than I thought, but it prompted us to think about real life, I think.
It sure did.
It's funny.
Yeah.
For a movie that was about something as unrealistic seeming as that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was good.
Yep, really good.
Yeah, good.
All right. Well, we'll see everybody in a couple more weeks.
Yep. Two more weeks. We'll be back for the beginning of Lent and Ted Chiang.
You bet.
Sci-fi goodness.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Yeah. Bye-bye, everyone.
All right.